I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Seattle's women's soccer team is honoring an activist judge with a long, long history of dangerous rulings. Plus, a Seattle jail guard quit her job in protest of the facility not protecting female inmates from biological men. Also, today on Florida Report, Miranda had an epiphany at the polls she'll share with us. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. It's a great time to sign up to be a subscriber as we near the election. UndividedPod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We got a great story to start the show today, thanks to some eagle-eyed Undivided viewers. Big thanks to Andy and Daniel, who sort of bird-dogged this story for us last night and sent it on over to us, and I thought, we got to start the show with that. So I have complained, I think is an appropriate word, on this show before. In fact, just earlier this week, or maybe late last week, about how you can be as loony fringe lefty as you want in the city of Seattle and in Washington State, and you're normalized, you're mainstreamed. You know, you can be part of the events and activities and sporting events and blah, 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 all these things, and it's not a big deal. But even if you're moderate or like slightly right of center, you're treated like an outcast. Like, people won't associate with you. You can't be like part of mainstream events and things because, oh my gosh, is that a Trump MAGA Republican? And personally speaking, I think this angers me because it's happened to me, right? So I'll get a little bit of angst about it. Not that I need to be mainstreamed or hang out with all those weirdos, but a perfect example of this I always use, and it speaks to just the rotten core of Seattle politics and how the spectrum of politics is so shifted, right? It's like moderates to them is like a liberal, and that's not even, they call them conservatives. It's like a progressive is a moderate, mm-hmm. right? In Seattle. And it's like, if you're a socialist, oh, you're kind of on the left, and a progressive is a moderate, and then like a liberal's on the right. And then everything right of that is just, oh, cuckoo righties. And I use the example of a few years ago, right when I was quitting my job at Fox 13, there was, I don't know if it was Seattle Met or one of those magazines did like a list of the top five most influential thinkers in Seattle. And I made the list and I thought, well, that's real nice. They think of me as one of the top five most influential thinkers in Seattle. And then I read the little write-up on me and it was like, I was the only like conservative, you know, in there. So I was probably just the token conservative. But then it was like this negative write-up. Like, oh, I'm an influential thinker, but I'm a loose cannon. You know? And then also on that list was that police abolitionist lady. Who's the one that moved to Detroit? Nikita Oliver. Oh, sorry, mm-hmm. they, them. Yeah. Nikita Oliver, who like ruined Seattle before moving to Detroit, was a far left socialist police abolitionist, you know, run for city council and mayor unsuccessfully. And it was this just like glowing write up on how why she's one of the most influential thinkers in Seattle. And that's the moment I realized is like, their sense of what's normal and not and what's acceptable and not is so, so skewed. And so, yeah, you could be as far fringe lefty as you want. You could be a socialist, police abolitionist. You're absolutely welcome in the club. But God forbid you're moderate, have a little ounce of independent thought, or Republican. Then mm-hmm. it's like, well, you're not welcome. Like, you just, and we experienced this. We've had people, we talked about Andrea Suarez, who is now running for state house, but pre-primary, we were like banished from speaking to her essentially because, oh, that would be really bad for Andrea if she was associated with you. It's like, would it be? I don't get that. And she's now like put that out and said, no, it's cool. But so just an example to get into this story. So the Seattle Reign FC, the women's soccer club in Seattle, does something called honors its legends. So they tweeted this out. Meet our Starbucks Seattle Reign FC legend, Judge Veronica Galvin, King County Superior Court judge. Interesting. So what is a legend? What's the canvas? Let's see here. Yeah. So it's sponsored by Starbucks, the Legends Campaign, celebrating extraordinary female leaders in the Pacific Northwest. At each home game, home match, my apologies to the soccer fans. Seattle Reign and Starbucks will honor one woman as a legend in recognition of her extraordinary contributions to our community and beyond. All right. What are the extraordinary contributions of King County Superior Court Judge Veronica Galvin? Well, her extraordinary contributions are many because she's been in the news many, many times going back at least 5 years. And by extraordinary contributions, I mean horrific contributions to the erosion of public safety in Seattle and King County. Let's just go through a couple of the headlines, shall we? Judge releases 12-year-old accused of using ghost gun in Seattle carjacking. Yep, sent him home on electronic home monitoring. Teens arrested with modified guns at Chinatown Seafair Parade released to home monitoring, which we said at the time, if these had been some little white supremacists or something there to ruin a Chinatown parade, they'd probably still be behind bars awaiting trial. But nope, teens arrested with modified guns released to home monitoring. Let's see. Attacker who fractured El Corazon singer's skull out of jail. Yeah, almost kill someone randomly for no reason with a bat? Well, King County Superior Court Judge Veronica Galvin will release you after 10 days behind bars with no bail. You just have to promise to take part in an enhanced community center for alternative programs and do some drug treatment. Yeah, no big deal there. In fact, our friend Dory Monson in 2019, he was really the first one to raise a red flag about this exact judge now being honored by the Seattle Reign FC. He did an extensive story in 2019 about Judge Veronica Galvin, and he wrote this. We have a very active socialist Marxist political structure around here. Their stated desire is to dismantle the structures of governance and order so they can rebuild it all in their image. How do you do that? You do it with crime. You do it with drugs. You let criminals take over the streets. We have the second worst property crime of any major city in the country. We have probably the worst drug crisis of any city in the country. We may as well have legalized drugs, seeing how we allow drug use all over and how we don't prosecute people for possessing small amounts of hard drugs. When you do those things, you weaken a region and you get closer to the stated goal of destroying it. It's a bizarre fantasy, but it's so much more closer to reality than anyone wants to admit or acknowledge. They want to see our systems torn down so they can put it in their twisted vision of what law enforcement should be. All of that, our friend Dory wrote in 2019 about Judge Veronica Galvin and what she represents, which is the erosion of the rule of law, which is the absolute erosion of justice in our justice system and what that really means for the victims of crimes. And this judge is absolutely an activist in a robe. She, I don't think, hides from that. There's a Facebook post that she put out on her personal Facebook. What does resistance look like when you wear a black robe? I recognize that the institution I work for never expected me to occupy this space, but I shall occupy it by acknowledging my privilege and recognizing the institution I love has been complicit in perpetuating oppression. I shall continue to educate, to learn, and to speak my truth as both a judge and a woman of color, as these identities are not mutually exclusive. I am grateful to be surrounded by colleagues who support me in this endeavor, ensuring our practices conform to our principles. And our principles are soft on crime, even at the expense of the safety of community members. Now, again, one of our eagle-eyed viewers, Daniel, who is bird dog in this story, found this podcast that just a couple months ago, Judge Galvin appeared on with Enrique Serna, who's like a longtime Latino reporter in Washington State, sort of focuses on those issues. And the podcast, and again, this is just a few months ago. So he had her on his show to talk to her, you know, despite all of these. And I think because of all the controversy around these decisions she's made, where teens or young adults go out, commit very, very heinous, violent acts, and they go to her court and they're given a little slap on the wrist and, oh, go home to mommy and daddy, because I'm sure that's a wonderful environment if you're bringing a ghost gun to a parade or if you're beating a man at random with a baseball bat, right? So she talked a little bit about the juvenile crime crisis and about, you know, what's going on in her mind when she makes these decisions. And specifically, this first clip I want to play you is about teens who are committing crimes with guns and her assertion that, well, it's not really their fault. It's our fault. Here it is.
None of the systems, none of us have clean hands within this context, because these children are accessing these weapons from adults. They're not going into stores and buying them. No. From adults who may not be responsible and have them locked up or have them safely to the side. I mean, we see grown people, get upset that somebody cut them off in a vehicle and start shooting. Grown people. And yet we have a higher standard and expectation for a 12-year-old. It's like putting a 2-year-old behind the wheel of a car and expecting that they're not going to hit anything. We have to take responsibility somewhat that we have created an environment in which these weapons are glorified. They are considered something of a thing to have to be cool or whatever. But this is on us as well. These children did not come into this world, you know, with a machine gun in their hand.
Yeah, and people didn't come into this world with a bullet in their head. You know, people weren't born into this world with a fractured skull from a baseball bat. What's your point? And she says, all of us need to take responsibility. I'm not taking responsibility for Jack. I don't take responsibility for that. The vast majority of the state has nothing to do with kids, young adults who illegally obtain firearms and go out and gangbang and shoot people and beat people. So no, I'm not complicit in that. My viewers and listeners aren't complicit in that. Nicole's not complicit in that. I'm not taking responsibility for that. Don't put that on us. There are a lot of other, it's not like, I mean, she wants to act like, oh, there's a gun in a home. And so automatically a kid's going to go grab it and they're going to go out and gangbang and use it to rob people, to carjack, to shoot fellow gang members. Like, no, there's a lot of steps between gun being in the home, kid picking it up to commit a crime. And so she wants to make this a community problem, right? Well, it's like, well, what about the people who are hurt, the people who are killed? And, you know, there's never an acknowledgement when it comes to this of who the victims typically are when a youth, you know, these youth that are coming into her courtroom go out and commit crimes. Oftentimes they're other youth. What about those kids? What about those kids who aren't picking up guns, who aren't gang banging, who aren't hurting anyone? And then they get hurt by a youth who is. So her singular focus really seems to be in this entire conversation on coddling criminals because society has done something wrong to them. And I'm not saying there's no societal responsibility to try to do something to prevent youth from getting into a criminal life. And she talks a little bit about that, too. I just want to play this. I got two other short clips I want to play for you. Here's one.
Let's make sure we continue to fund community groups that provide programming to these youth, mentorship to these youth.
Yeah, community programs like the one that was just in the news that did just that, but it turned out it was just one big drug trafficking ring and the lady who was in charge with it was like trafficking deadly drugs into our communities. Yeah, I'm all for community programs that go to help youth, but maybe we should have a little more oversight of those community programs because there's been an awful lot of them where people involved in them have either been stealing money, wasting money, no results, or in this case, like federal drug trafficking charges. All right, one last clip from this conversation that this judge had on Enrique Cerné's podcast.
Give them a reason to look in a different direction other than the one that they've been going down.
I agree. You know what a reason would be to look in a different direction other than the path they've been going down? Consequences. Accountability. As a judge, that's part of your job. Now, I'm all for, and as a society, it benefits us to prevent crime before it happens and to do that by making sure that people have economic opportunity, that they do have, you know, a good quality education. Man, we could have a long conversation about that right now, right? Because in Washington State, we know that our kids in public schools are not getting a good quality education. They're getting a free pass. Oh, no child can fail. We're going to send you out into the world. You never got a good quality education. We're going to expect you to succeed and not take a different path in life, even though we have set you up to fail in the name of like woke ideology. So we could have an entirely different conversation about our education system run by Democrats. But I agree, like we need to make sure that there's intervention very early on before a kid goes out, picks up a baseball bat and smashes in a singer's skull, before a kid prints a ghost gun, goes to a parade with it to shoot a rival gang member or whatever it is, before someone uses a gun to commit like their 14th carjacking of the month. I agree, but at the point when they do that, at the point, and we call them kids, but these are teens, in some cases, young adults who are committing very adult crimes. At the point when they do that and they're in your court in front of you, you have an obligation as a pivotal part of the justice system to make sure that they're held accountable in a way that will, can you play that last clip again?
Give them a reason to look in a different direction other than the one that they've been going down.
In a way that will give them a reason to look in a different direction other than the one they've been going down. And I'll tell you what, sending them back home to their house on electronic home monitoring, that's not giving them a reason to go in a different direction other than the one they've been going down. There's the example of I think about this clip often, the teenager who's in court and he doesn't get electronic home monitoring after committing, I think it was a drive-by shooting, and he's like shocked by it because he brings up another one of his friends who did get electronic home monitoring, another fellow gang member. And so what did it teach him? Well, it taught him, well, my friend got electronic home monitoring after he committed a crime with a gun, so I'm going to do that and I'm going to get electronic home monitoring. Then he got a judge who wouldn't give it to him and he was shocked by it. So here you have this judge who, by any reasonable measure, is a fringe activist who is actively making our communities more dangerous. And what does the Seattle Reign name her? What is it? A legend. And Starbucks, sponsored by Starbucks, totally normalized, totally mainstream behavior, trotting her out there at a home game, celebrating her as a Seattle Reign FC legend, an extraordinary female leader in the Pacific Northwest. Do you think for one second that they've ever honored a Republican woman as an extraordinary female leader? Or even a moderate? Like, show me a moderate that's been honored as an extraordinary female leader. Show me someone who's pro-police, who's pro-law enforcement, who's been honored by Seattle Reign as an extraordinary female leader in the Pacific Northwest. And these are nominations, by the way. You think if we flooded them with nominations that I'm an extraordinary female leader in the Pacific Northwest, you'd even get a response? And by the way, please don't do that, because I would reject it. I absolutely do not want to be honored by Seattle Reign FC in any way, shape, or form. But this just, again, it's a larger picture. It's not just me complaining that, like, you know, we're vilified and we're outcasts and all these things because we have like reason and common sense. Because when that's the crowd that's vilifying you and labeling you an outcast, that's actually a compliment and an accomplishment. But that just shows you on the spectrum how messed up and screwed up the spectrum of politics is in Washington State, and why we are the way we are. Is everything is skewed so, so far to the left where they normalize people like this and behavior like this, when instead she should be scrutinized, she should be criticized, and she probably shouldn't have a job. And she, you know, I know there's stuff that shields judges from lawsuits and all of that. But I mean, this is something where you have families who are devastated by the decisions that she's made in that courtroom. And now she's being honored. She's a legend. Yeah, she's legendary, but not for good reasons. And I mean, this whole, you know, normalizing, you know, and it bothers me when sporting teams take like blatantly political positions, just because like sports is supposed to be this thing where it's like everybody can enjoy it, right? And I'm not saying that Seattle Reign FC thing is a blatantly political position. I don't know if you would think that they know by just a Google or do something to know, but they don't see her decisions as bad. So that's the issue there. They don't see those decisions as bad. They see them as like she is fighting for justice, right? So then the Seattle Storm comes out. Literally a tweet from the Seattle Storm account. Was that this morning? God, not a surprise, but still. I mean, what a big middle finger to anyone who enjoys watching the Seattle Storm who isn't a Democrat. Here at the Storm, we are advocates for equality and opportunity. We need leaders who fight for all of us all the time. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz align strongly with our mission and values, and we proudly endorse this presidential team. Make your voting plan at vote.org. Seattle Storm for Harris Walz. Like, again, I mean, a Seattle sporting team would never be allowed. It would never be acceptable to endorse a moderate or even a Republican, ever. And so you just become outcast. And I guarantee, yeah, I'm sure that a lot of the Seattle Storm fan base are voting for Harris Walz. I think people who are paying money to go watch women play basketball are. Does that mean? Sorry, it's just really boring. Are voting for Harris Walz. So why do you always look at me like I said something that's incredibly offensive?
I didn't even look up. I just smiled.
Am I wrong, though?
No, you're not wrong.
Of course, I'm not wrong.
But their goal is to attract more. So
right, nobody's gonna, because you're just polarizing. Defending them, right? So, and yeah, it's,
and I think you've talked about this before, but even going to a Kraken game and it's all politics, right? It's like pride and trans and blah blah blah. Oh, they right. have all these special days, and you're polarizing.
You're polarizing people. You're making people outcasts, and
it's
like, again,
escape.
It's supposed to be an escape. Yeah, the Kraken game I went to where it was like everything was pride and there was like pride stuff in intermission. And it's like, okay, like I support gay people, but also can I just watch hockey? Like, can I just watch hockey and you not alienate? But yeah, fringe loony lefty, very, very good. Anything left or right of center, anything right of liberal, evil, bad, horrible, we won't let you sit with us, essentially. The National Review has been covering quite a bit the issues happening in Washington State around transgender inmates, specifically at the women's prison in Purdy, how men can be like, I'm a woman, and then they go there despite whatever their crimes are, even if they have crimes against women, and they can be housed with women until their sentences are over, like, yay for them. So there's also some issues, it turns out, happening at the correctional facility in Seattle. So that's typically, unless you've got... People sometimes get confused about the difference between a jail and a prison. You might serve your time in jail if you've got like less than a year or like, you know, a smaller sentence, or if you're holding, like if you get a judge that's not Veronica Galvin and you actually get bail, like, and you can't meet it, you have to stay in there or whatever. So National Review put out this story. Seattle jail nurse quits after facility ignores alleged sexual harassment by trans identifying male inmates. Good for this nurse. So I just wanted to give the National Review and Caroline Downey credit for continuing to cover these issues, because Caroline, who's been on our Sunday show, has really been at the forefront of this stuff. But what they're quoting for this story actually comes from something called IW Features. IW Features is a project for independent women's form. IWF is the leading national women's organization dedicated to developing and advancing policies that are more than just well-intended, but actually enhance people's freedoms, opportunities, and well-being. So they engage and inform women about how policies issues impact them and their loved ones. So they get a lot of these stories from women across the country on issues impacting women's health and safety, et cetera. So they did this story on the Seattle jail nurse who quit after unsafe trans policies force female inmates to share space with predatory men. Good for this nurse at this facility, because this was about looking out for, you know, the left wants to say, oh, we're looking out for inmates. I mean, the judge, you know, the best interest. But then they will subject them to being abused sometimes, harassed by men in a closed facility. Yeah, really looking out for the inmates. It says Olivia, whose name has been changed to protect her identity, worked as a charge nurse in Seattle's King County Correctional Facility for several years. She revealed to IW Features that the jail administration neglected to act even after receiving many concerns from frontline staff about the safety and dignity of female inmates. In fact, according to Olivia, jail leadership would not even confirm whether they were logging or tracking female inmates' formal complaints. When it was discovered that jail staff were circulating a petition to improve conditions for female inmates, Olivia said jail leadership doubled down on their efforts to maintain the status quo. She told IW Features that she was the subject of a human resources investigation and was told to stop speaking with colleagues about the issue. She resigned from her position after jail leadership admitted, allegedly, that King County had no interest in balancing the safety of females and males identifying as transgender women. It says, in a particularly disturbing instance, Olivia alleged an aggressive male inmate who had exposed himself to other male inmates while in the men's unit was transferred to the women's unit after self-identifying as a woman. He predictably went on to expose himself to a female staffer and female inmates in the women's unit and exhibited violent behavior toward officers. Olivia said her colleagues on the health staff recommended that this inmate be returned to the men's housing unit. In spite of these recommendations, this inmate remained in the women's unit. Health staff strongly objected to the admission of another male inmate who was facing rape charges and other severe infractions against young women. He was allowed into female housing anyway. Can you imagine that? For the love of God. In another case, female inmates allegedly filed a complaint in writing that a male had started masturbating in front of them. Staff observed yet another male who was allegedly deliberately watching women in the shower. She added that none of these documented accounts prompted leadership to take action to protect female inmates. Yeah, tell me again how you care about women. Tell me again how much you care about women, how much you care about the treatment of offenders, right? That's one of the big issues for the left. And I think that people who are being incarcerated, they are the responsibility of the entity that's incarcerating them, because that opens you up to a liability issue. At the very least, if you don't care about these women, at least care about the liability that it opens taxpayers up to. So once they're in your care, essentially, you are responsible for them. And you're, because a man wants to say he's a woman, he's even if he's accused of rape, you're going to put him with women behind lock and key? A man who's exposing himself allegedly to men, you're going to put him with women now and think that he'll act any differently or that they're not in danger actively? This is really, I think we need to start talking about this and labeling what it is. It's sick. It's twisted and it's perverted. And I haven't really used that strong of a language about it, but it's really disgusting. In the name of your like gender ideology craze, you're willing to expose women to imminent harm. That's really sick stuff. Just imagine that. Put your mind like, hey, that guy says he's a woman. I know he's accused of raping a woman, but let's house him with another woman behind lock and key. That's genuinely disturbing that your politics would lead you to do that. And despite the fact you have health staff that's saying, hey, we can't do this. That guy's got to go back. Oh, no, he says he's a woman. Like, at the very least, put them in their own unit. People who identify as transgender, at the very least, because there's a lot of shades of that, right? There might be some people who were born a man who have actually transitioned or been on hormones for several years who find themselves in the criminal justice system. And then there might be some guy who's got like, oh, I'm staring down life. So I'd rather spend that with a bunch of chicks than a bunch of dudes. So now I'm a woman. Come on, that happens. You know that happens. So there's a whole spectrum of it, right? I understand that's a weird situation to deal with. That's why, if you're a transgender inmate, I think the options are either you are housed in the facility that it matches your birth gender, or you get an option to go to a separate unit where only transgender inmates are. Those are the two options that you get. I don't understand why this is so difficult. It's really, at this point, we need to call it disgusting. We need to call it predatory behavior, because that's what it is. And we need to demand better. And I don't really know what it's going to take. I think these are issues the Seattle media refuses to cover and Washington State mainstream media refuses to cover. Like, really anything around gender ideology, gender identity. I mean, and when they do cover it, look at the way they cover it. When I talked about that trans teacher who was moonlighting as orgasmic drag king Jack King off, lock up your daughters. The Seattle media, mainstream media covered that, but with him as the victim and me as the right-wing, like, horrible neo-Nazi angry conservative. Not like, hey, maybe, you know, I don't know, here's a thought. Like, maybe you don't call yourself Jack King off and the orgasmic drag king and say lock up your daughters when you work with kids. I don't know, is that... is that too much to ask? Like, I don't think so. So when the media does cover these things, it's about like they just hook, line, and sinker the Democratic narrative. No, this is about protecting people. This is about equality and understanding and inclusion. Yeah, it's not. Is it really your definition or version of inclusion and equality to put a man accused of rape in a jail cell with a woman? Because if it is, that's sick stuff. That's sick stuff. So we need to call it what it is, and we need to continue to demand that more mainstream outlets cover this stuff and ask them why they're not covering this stuff. And so a lot of credit to National Review and to Caroline Downey using her national platform to continue to bring attention to what's happening to these women who have no voice in our state. Like, again, some of them are behind bars. They're all behind bars for a reason, right? And in this state, Lord knows, we don't arrest people and lock them up or put them in, you know, the King County jail to await trial with bail, unless they've done something very, very serious. So to me, these are separate issues. Like, I don't care how serious the thing you've done is. You have a right, innocent until proven guilty, right? If you've done something serious, you're being held on bail. At the very least, your safety and security is, in this case, the responsibility of King County, because it exposes the taxpayers to risk. Even if for some reason you can't find it in your heart to, like, empathize with a woman who gets locked in a jail cell with an accused male rapist, which is just insane, then at least from a liability perspective, you have to understand that, like, that opens us up, each of us as a taxpayers, up to millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars in liability. So it's just insane stuff. We've got to find a way to mainstream this issue. The one issue I think is getting more mainstream is the boys competing against girls in sports. I do think that that's getting a little more mainstreamed. I mean, we played that clip yesterday with Kamala Harris being asked by the MSNBC, NBC lady, if she thinks that transgender people in America should have access to surgery or, you know, transgender care. And Kamala Harris was even like waffling on that because it's become a hot topic to like commit to. And she's trying to appeal to moderate voters. So Matt Walsh was saying even in that a little bit, like 4 years ago, she would have been like, absolutely. Because 4 years ago, she was doing interviews when she was running for president saying that we should be paying for the transgender surgeries for illegal immigrants in holding facilities. And when she was in California as attorney general, the state paid for reassignment surgeries for inmates who were locked up in California. And now all of a sudden, 4 years later, she's like, well, I'm waffling on even like a very muted version of that question, right? So I don't know. I just feel like we just got to keep peppering and pushing and urging other media outlets to cover things. Some of this, I don't know if it's just the language that they're worried about. Like they're worried about it being too controversial or the language they have to use in order to do it. And it's just too complicated of a story to talk about on TV in a way that I don't know what it is.
I think it's the bravery of a person like this, Olivia. Her name's not Olivia and she wouldn't speak on camera. And so she's not going to, you know, Fox 13 or Cairo 7 to tell them their story. Or to tell her story. And so I think it's about bravery and getting people to speak up. And I mean, the more there are, the less trolls will hit back.
Yep.
And
strength in numbers.
From experience, the trolls die down eventually.
100. Strength in numbers. I get not infrequently messages from people still working in Seattle News, some of my former colleagues saying, keep up the great work. Not infrequently. I mean, I'm sure there are some who think I'm like the worst human being on the planet, but not infrequently.
And not the ones you like.
I would write. Those are the ones that are just typical. So it's like you have some left who want to do good work. They want to talk about these things. They want to do their jobs well, but they're prevented from doing so. And not everyone can walk away and start a wildly successful podcast with a producer like Nicole.
That's right.
You got to be real smart, real likable, real pretty, real humble.
Exactly.
Real, all those things. Anyway. All right. We've got some great people keep sending us their First Mark Challenge victories.
I know.
I love it. This one's great. And it's giving me an idea for where to go when next time I'm in Long Beach. Tanya says, wanted to let you know we are a new business owner. We're new business owners in Long Beach, Washington. I bought a coffee cafe. We use First Mark to find our insurance. It was the best choice we made. I love that. What's your coffee cafe called?
Well, I thought it might be Coffee Cafe.
It says we bought a coffee cafe.
I don't know.
So I don't know, but we'd love to give you some love on the show. So yeah, if you hear this, message us. And then the next time we do a read for First Mark next week, we'll tell everybody what your coffee cafe is called.
Love it.
But anyway, First Mark Insurance is great. I'm a member of the First Mark family. The business is insured through First Mark. Daryl and Meg, they just bought a house. They're now members of the First Mark family. Nicole's members of the First Mark family. We get no special discount. We get no special rates or special treatment. Obviously, you know, they're advertisers, so we make money from advertisements. But we turned around and we became members of the First Mark family because it is an exceptional product. It's an exceptional service. You never pay them anything for it. I just laugh about it because it's really a no-brainer. Like, literally, why would you do your insurance on your own when you can call First Mark Insurance, have them lay out the options for you for free, and then you never pay them a dime? You guys, it's a no-brainer. They might come back to you and say, hey, your insurance is great. You don't need us. Then that's fine. Then what have you lost? Then you have the peace of mind knowing that you did a damn good job of finding the insurance and matching your insurance needs all on your own. And you can pat yourself on the back and move on with your life. But more likely, they're going to say, hey, you're paying for insurance you don't need, or hey, we can save you money on that. And God forbid you have a claim and insurance company wants to drop you. They can help you with that too. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Worked for Tanya. It'll probably work for you too. You can be our next First Mark Challenge victory. All right. Let's see. Portland is going to get a new mayor this year. Ted Wheeler, who took us through, you know, the summer of love in Portland. And the homelessness debacle in Portland and the utter decline of Portland's downtown, he decided not to seek a third term, probably wise. Although, depending on the results of the November election, Portland voters might be wishing he had. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. So not only is Portland getting a new mayor, they're also experimenting with a new ranked choice voting system for the mayoral election and the city council election. So that's kind of interesting, too. I know that Seattle and in Washington State, that's an idea that has been bandied about. To me, it's still like I mean, this whole thing is a little bit confusing. We'll talk about it in a moment, but let's meet your contestants to be the next mayor of Portland.
Next to him, Leave Austis, an author, writer, musician, and stripper, also known as Viva Las Vegas.
But, and these vacancies, we need office to housing conversions right away. I don't believe in insisting that workers come back downtown. I think that's environmentally unconscionable. But I do see a yearning from my fellow artists to come back downtown and to really make it hum again with activity. So make some of these zombie buildings, as my campaign calls them, make those available for artist studios in the interim until we can get these housing conversions up and running. Make music studios. Once artists come and bring their energy back downtown, support the small businesses that follow them. Make sure that when their window gets smashed, that the city is there to pay for that. Make sure that, curbside appeal is the city's responsibility, not just the owner's. Okay, that's all my time, but thank you for the question.
Ms. Rubio, let's talk about your 150 parking and traffic tickets, your failures to appear in court, six driver's license suspensions, largely before you were elected to city council. Then there was an incident last month where you scraped another vehicle while parking and walked away without leaving a note. Our reporting also shows you were ticketed as a sitting city commissioner for an expired vehicle registration, which a year later, according to records, still had not been updated. Given that history, what can you say to reassure voters who may have questions about whether they should trust you with an $8+ billion budget and whether you will be a champion for law and order?
That's a really, great you question.
Know, those are some, that was actually a wonderfully worded question. Great options, honestly, you know. Stripper, like parking ticket scoff law, like really great options. It very Portland. Portland is weird, and that was weird. So I don't know if either of them are really at the top of the ticket, but it's fun, isn't it?
The stripper, well, no, they're both pretty, they're in the top five. In the,
yeah, so mm-hmm. the way this was kind of explained to me, because again, it's a little confusing. So there's 19 mayoral candidates competing for the mayoral seat, but really only, I was told, 4 or 5 of them are kind mm-hmm. of legit. And so the ones that made the TV debate, like those are of the 19... They're like toward the top of the list.
And that's because they've raised the most money. So they've raised significant amounts of money, those two.
Oh, God. This from the Associated Press. The open mayoral race in the state's most populous city features 19 candidates, all vying to lead after years of growing frustration over homeless encampments. Among them, 3 city council members, including one ensnared in a driving record scandal, a stripper, and a trucking company CEO vowing to end unsheltered homelessness in 12 months. Yeah, we've heard a vow like that before. Whoever wins the mayoral seat will oversee a completely new system of government. Portland is expanding its city council from 5 to 12 members who will be elected by voters in individual districts rather than citywide, and adding a city manager position. And all of the candidates, including the nearly 100 running for the new city council seats, will be elected by ranked choice voting for the first time. So Portland keeps it weird. They're going to vote in a weird way. They're going to maybe vote for a stripper or someone who has 150 unpaid parking tickets. That question was... That should be studied in journalism school. He's like, you did this, you did that, you walked away after scratching a car, you did this, and you did that, you did that, you did this, and this.
Given that.
Oh my, given that. Should we trust you? Brilliant. We didn't even need to include her answer because the question was the real gem. Nothing she could really say in that
and
circumstance.
She's already on the council. Like, I know. She's already been elected.
Imagine passing laws that you're expecting other people in the city to follow, which she does as a member of the council, right? As a counselor. And then you're simultaneously like racking up 150 parking tickets and not paying them. This is great. Portland, thank you for making me feel a little better about Seattle sometimes.
They're the only place that
San Francisco.
Sometimes.
But San Francisco had a little like awakening, but they hit rock sure. bottom, like the abyss. But yeah, sometimes it's nice to just like talk about other places being a little bit more ridiculous than us. But all right, let's see. Oh, yeah. I want to remind you guys that this Saturday we're having our last Get Out Day of Action for Dave Reichert in Stillicum. So we knocked Federal Way off the list. We knocked Bothell off the list. We knocked Marysville off the list. We've had more people join us at every event we've done. So we'll be in Stillicum this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sign waving or door knocking. You get to pick your poison. Nicole will lead the sign wavers. I'll lead the door knockers. Which actually is very fun. I'm looking forward to doing it again. And we're going to be not only out there for Dave Reichert, but also Kelly Chambers, who's running for Pierce County Executive. We've got to make sure that she beats Ryan Hell No Mello, because he will turn Pierce County into King County and Seattle. And then also, of course, we'll be reminding people, vote yes, pay less on all of the initiatives. But this weekend, this is on the 26th. It'll be just days until the election, so we need to get out there and do this. So if you haven't joined us for one of the Save Washington Days of Action, this is your final opportunity. We will have coffee for you.
I also heard
that. Love to see you.
I got a little tip that the teachers
union yes.
is getting out.
Oh my God, you guys get
just
this.
Down the road in Lakewood.
Get
so
this.
We must have a bigger crowd.
Yeah, so
than
the teachers union
for
Twine and Nobles, they're going to be out door knocking for Bob Ferguson.
Just down
and
the road.
For Chris Rakedahl.
Ugh.
Like, just, you know, they did that because we're down there. You know, they're going to try to get to doors before us. They're going to try to sine wave and get to the good corners mm-hmm. before us. Not on my watch. So we need every single one of you, strength in numbers, because now it's a competing situation. And when it comes to competition, I want to win, okay? All right, so please be there, and I'll post this across social media one more time before Saturday, but we would absolutely love to see you. And I know Dave would too, and I know Kelly would too, and we got to get out there and fight for those initiatives. So do something so you can wake up on November 6th feeling better about yourself. All right, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, do what so many Undivided viewers and listeners have done. Call our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Even call him just for a chat if you're kind of contemplating, not just for a chat, although he's a chatty Cathy. He would actually probably love that.
He probably would.
In a good way, Wes, you're a chatty Cathy in a good way. I think you and my mom would have great long conversations. My mom's also kind of a chatty Cathy. Wes is just a nice guy, but like, he's really good at, he knows the market really well, right? He's been doing this for a long time. So even if you're not sure about the timeline and you want to kind of get a market analysis or understand how the market is, reach out to Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. That's what retired Seattle police officer Mike Boggs did. He was selling his home after 30 years, retiring from the SPD, moving to Arizona.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price we want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah, so he's in Arizona. Good for him. Wes was able to help him get his home sold in record time. So check out Wes Jones. Start by using his home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, this is a fun Florida report today. So we tape Florida Report usually around like 10:30 in the morning, right before the show. And I knew I was going to talk to Miranda about voting in Florida because she just went and cast her vote in early voting in person. And so we're always like just chit-gabbing, right, before we get started. And Nicole thankfully had started the record, even though we weren't recording the segment, because she captured this wonderful moment with my sister.
I loved voting. I always get so hyped up when I go to the polls.
Hyped up, won't take it no more. Hyped up.
And also, before we go live, I would like you ladies to know.
You voted for Trump?
I voted for Donald Trump.
Why would you just tell us that on the air? Get recording.
I am.
Okay. Oh, good. Oh, you're recording? So we captured that?
Yeah.
You little SOB. You see how excited we were? Too much fun. Had
I really
to play
didn't
that
think she
for
was
you.
Say that when I kind of guessed it, but I didn't mean to take it away.
I know. So anyway, and then we had to start recording and talk about it. So let's get to our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda. Wow, everyone. Yes, everyone. Well, we had a family, so we were recording before we were recording, and that wasn't part of the thing, so we played it anyway. There was a family group chat, and so I told Mom dropped in our DMs the other day on the show, and, you know, she's not a big fan of Trump, which is fine, Mother. Vote for who you want to vote for. And then she's like, would you elect Trump as your governor? And I was like, yeah, if the choices were Donald Trump and Bob Ferguson. And I said three of her four children would be voting for Donald Trump. What changed your mind? Because you were going to vote for the libertarian Chase Oliver.
Yeah, and I went in with my practice ballot. I printed it out. Mm-hmm. I had everything filled out except for the presidential one. That's the only one that I didn't even fill out on my practice ballot because, you know, I always like to vote libertarian because I always just want to give them the numbers because I would like to see America one day the sun rises and there's a three-party option that's viable.
I agree.
So I've always just kind of given them the numbers. But the more I thought about it, you know, Chase Oliver is definitely not a step up for the libertarians. I think they probably could have done way better. And as I'm thinking about it, I'm like, you know, had it been somebody else that I think that I liked a little more, I probably would have been gung-ho, like, this is what I'm going to do. But the fact that I kept thinking about it made me realize, like, you're kind of like throwing away the vote for myself, not even for everybody's excuse of why elections don't go their way. But like for myself, I just didn't feel that good voting for him. So I went back in my head and I thought, when was the last time you made a ton of money with your business? And it was when Donald Trump was president. So that is pretty much what tipped my scale, was the last time, I think the most successful year of my having a business was in 2019. Yeah. And so I was like, who was in power then? Whether that has anything to do with it or not, I don't know. But that's what I went with.
And how do you feel?
I actually feel pretty good. You know, I mean, I think that I would love to see some different options regardless. But if this is where we are right now, I think I definitely weighed out my options all the way up till pen hit paper. It wasn't something that I had made a decision on a long time ago. So I feel good about it.
Are you ready for what our mother will say when she finds out?
No, I think that she kind of already knows because I did talk to her this morning and we talked a little bit without me actually telling her who I voted for. So.
Oh, she'd be so disappointed in us. But that's all right, Mom. We're still going to take care of you when you get old, even as little deplorables. All your little deplorables will be there for you. So so I was saying before we got started that, like, Florida voting is like a Washington Republican voter's wet dream. And people want to go to the polls. They don't want to. Nicole, I can say wet dream. It's fine. We're all adults here. Nicole's giving me the look of shame. So what is it like to vote in Florida?
I mean, it's in person, which is something I've always experienced. I've never done mail-in voting. I've lived here since I was 18. So I love going into the polls. I love seeing people actively showing up in person to vote. I was behind this older gentleman in line who was wearing a suit and a tie. And I know that he dressed up just to go vote because he had a little American flag bow tie on. Oh. And he asked me some questions about where I'm from and whatever, because I didn't speak Spanish. So they always ask you. And he's like, I just love seeing young people vote. And it just made me feel good being there. And the process was quick. I mean, early voting in Florida, I think there's like 36 locations around the county. You can show up to any of them during early voting. So there wasn't much of a wait. I think I waited 5 minutes in line before I got my ballot.
Smart.
Yeah. So I have voted on election day and the lines are much longer and you do have to go to your assigned precinct for those. So I figured out I would early vote this year and just get it done.
Yeah, it makes sense. So there are a couple of significant things that have made national news that are on the ballot in Florida that you had to make a decision on. You can tell us how you voted or not. There are amendments 1 through 4. I think 1, 3, and 4 are very interesting. Let's leave the most controversial for last. Amendment 1 has to do, we've talked about on the show before, with school board positions and whether they're partisan.
Correct. So this would basically be like, if you vote yes, they would make school boards part, like the elections partisan. If you vote no, they would keep, you know, your political affiliation off the ballots during those elections. And I voted no on this because I just think school boards are already kind of this popularity contest in a way when you get down to it. So adding Republican and Democrat to it, to me, doesn't do the school board races any favors. I think it just creates more of division in a place that just people really need to be coming together and putting students' needs first. And I don't think that your party affiliation being announced has anything to do with that. It obviously affects, you know, how your opinions are and stuff like that. But I just don't think it needs to be announced during these types of elections.
Yeah, I know you were struggling with that one when we talked about it on the show. And I think it just generally dissuades people from doing more research into candidates. I would like to see no one get to have a letter next to their name and have to like make their argument across the board. So I like that one. All right. Amendment 3. We know that you've never smoked weed in Florida because it's absolutely not legal right now. So I know it's hard for you to really have a strong opinion on this one, Cheech, but Amendment 3 would legalize weed recreationally in Florida. Miranda,
How do
yes.
you vote?
I think that marijuana has a huge place in society to replace certain types of like over-the-counter medicine, even prescription medicine. I do think a lot of people choose to smoke over drinking, which I think sometimes is just a better option in a lot of different ways. There's a lot of arguments for and against this. My biggest thing with this is whether or not people can grow their own weed. Mm. I think that that's true freedom. I think it allows you to control the substance that you're getting. There's just a lot to that. And this particular amendment doesn't really specify whether you can or you cannot. And both sides were arguing the wording in both directions. So I do think that the wording's a little vague, but I did vote yes, because I do think even if it turns into like big weed monopoly, it's a step in the right direction for people to take the criminalization part out of it and let people just kind of like come home from work and smoke their weed. I just don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, and I know you haven't actually partook since you almost died. So our lungs are weed-free as of this moment, right?
They are. And, you know, I think I do feel better without it. So for me, particularly knowing both sides of use and non-use, I'm healthier because I don't use it, but that's just because of my personal situation. But I do think that I think that it's gotten a bad rap for too long. And the fact that it's even on the ballot is kind of showing that that stigma around marijuana is kind of going away.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there are, I think, young people getting addicted to it. That is an issue, right? I mean, I had a couple college roommates who they barely functioned. All they did is smoke weed. And I'm like, so there are definitely, but you know, there are people who are alcoholics too. And so it's sort of like, you're legalizing one poison and not the other. And it's like, now for the record, in case I ever run for office, yes, I have smoked weed before. And yes, I inhaled. I did. I have also done a couple marijuana gummies, which those are dangerous. Those are almost worse. You don't know what you're getting with those things. So just in case, right, I air all my dirty laundry on this show so that if I ever run for anything, there are no secrets. All right. Amendment 4 is the really serious one. Has to do with abortion. Take us through. And to me, this one's weird because it's really like all in or all out. It's really strange. So talk about it.
Yeah, so this amendment would allow abortions up to fetal viability, which is 23 to 24 weeks. Currently, after 6 weeks in Florida, you cannot legally have an abortion. So that is a huge change there. It would also allow healthcare professionals to help you make decisions whether or not your health is at risk. That would be considered in allowing you to have abortions after fetal viability. And then also, it would require parental notification if a minor wanted to have an abortion. And I am pro-choice. I just think that these decisions should be left between a woman and their healthcare provider. I don't think that we should have this as like this big, you know, talking point every year in elections. It's such a personal choice for everybody. I do, however, have issues with the wording being notifying parents rather than allowing for consent of parents. I think parents, you know, obviously deserve to know, but I think they also deserve the chance to have a little bit more of a say in something like that with their child. So I struggled with this one a little bit. I think that it's the wording is pretty off to me. And I wish that they would have maybe rethought about some of that so that it didn't become such like a difficult decision. I mean, I ended up voting yes for it. I just think that there's a few things in that wording I wish that they would like specify and be a little bit more tuned into.
I guess I'm confused about the parental notification thing. So I thought it was that they didn't have to have consent from a parent. Is that
it? They don't have to have consent, but the parent has to be notified. So notification and consent are obviously two different words.
So you're saying you would prefer consent ahead of the procedure, or...
I would prefer parental consent just because I just think that parents just have a right to be in charge of their minor kids' decisions. I really do. And that's probably coming from me being like older and looking at my past experiences in hindsight all over the board. You know, you just get older and your ideas change. You see kids as, you know, very capable individuals, but they also need guidance. And I just don't think the government is always the right place to find that guidance.
Yeah, I'm very curious how that one does, because 6 weeks to fetal viability is a huge jump for a red state. Ours is fetal viability here. You know, we allow minors to do a lot of things without their parents knowing about it. So it's tricky. That one, I think, is just up in the air. I mean, it's one of the national issues races that I'm going to be most interested in. So, Miranda, good stuff today. Look at you, you little maggot.
No, all I got to say is Trump better not disappoint me, because I think my biggest issue was like voting for him and then it just went downhill, you know?
Oh, 100%. Like, we will go. I'll march on the Capitol if Trump tries to stay. If the worst comes to fruition and they're saying he's going to be a dictator, he's not going to leave office, even though he left office the first time. Like, you really think at like what 80 or whatever, he's 80 something, that he's going to be like, I'm going to stay here. No, he wants to go back to his golf course. But okay, we'll all go and we'll march on the Capitol and we'll remove him if we need to. Fine.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, Miranda, thanks so much. Have a fun conversation with Mother. Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
All right. In line with that conversation with my sister and the Amendment 1 that's being voted on in Florida, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll, do you believe school board candidates should have a political affiliation next to their name on the ballot, similar to other candidates in the races? A lot of you saying yes. I'm actually kind of surprised, maybe, sort of. I know it makes it a little bit easier, but well, it's pretty split. Yes, 52% on Patreon say yes, 48% say no. Nicole says absolutely not. People would just start voting for a party. Brandon Ferris says absolutely. Along with judges, even if it's not a political affiliation with them, they should have to say how they vote typically. It's so hard to make choices off of the lack of that. If I saw King County, I immediately would vote for the opponent. Sally, I said no. Do your research instead of allowing people to vote the party line. Maybe that would get rid of some of the activists. Dan Moore said, in a perfect world, I would like to get rid of all partisan affiliations. Me too, Dan, me too. This would require voters to research each candidate and where they stand on issues that are important to them. Let me check over on locals. See, where's my locals poll? Do I not have a poll on locals? Oh my God. Hold on, guys. Did I forget about you today? No. I got it. I got it here. Let's see. Over on locals, Woody says, a good teacher would never bring political views into the classroom. They are not there to teach. They're there to teach, not indoctrinate. Unfortunately, we see this way too much nowadays. Todd Welch said, absolutely not. I don't want school board, city council, county council executives having political affiliation. I would also like to see it removed from most state, county, local offices. One more here. KickJJ2 said, in my opinion, school board members all bring their personal opinions, values, and agendas to the table. And, you know, even though they don't run with a political affiliation, you have parties that endorse one over the other. And so they're politically affiliated. It's just not on the ballot. But again, I kind of like that idea of saying, hey, you know, strip it from everyone. So at least people can't just do a party line vote. They have to actually look at like who are their endorsements and have some critical thought associated with that. I don't know. I just think the outcomes of our elections would be better. All right. Before we get to comments and our hilarious closing sanity check, we talk to Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital every Thursday. And I wanted to talk to him a little bit about Elon Musk, because Elon Musk has become so involved in the presidential cycle, yet he's still got this behemoth of Tesla. And what are the implications of him backing Donald Trump so vigorously when he has a lot of people relying on the success of Tesla? Could it backfire? Here's our conversation.
I've kind of got a complicated history with this guy, because I was on the radio for years telling people that I thought he was a carnival barker and a crook. And what I realized, and this is before the political shift, because people be like, oh, now you like him because you're on the right or whatever. My opinion of him started to change over time, because what I'd started to realize, okay, he wasn't lying. He was just wildly way too optimistic, which when you think about it, usually people like him that invent things are, right? And so that's when my opinion started changing. And then when he bought Twitter, my opinion changed substantially. I think it's hard not to have admiration for somebody that. And people are like, oh, he's just doing this. He's just doing that. Listen, even people as rich as Elon Musk do not do $50 billion purchases for optics.
Right.
Right. That's too big. And so anybody that's willing to put that substantial a percentage of their net worth up on an investment that they know that at the current price is probably not a good price for that investment, and they do it to preserve the freedom of speech, I think that's pretty remarkable. And it is also funny to see the people on the left turning on him, because before he did any of this, he was a warrior to the people on the left, mm-hmm. right? I mean, that was his shareholder base. And so it's just funny to see them turning on him now, and you just like, well, what happened to the whole Captain Universe and he's saving the world from global warming? Isn't that what we actually see, and it's actually a funny little critique, what we see is that global warming isn't as important to them, or climate change isn't as important to them as politics.
Yeah.
Right.
Donald Trump. Yep.
Despite what they all want us to believe, right? This is the defining issue of our time. Well, except for the fact that we don't like Trump. Rest assured, I think that he will be seen as playing a pretty important role in this election as well.
Well, and that's kind of what I'm more concerned about. So obviously he's now like all in. He hasn't done this to this extent with politics before. You know, he's going to Trump rallies. He's putting up $1 million per day of his own money, like to get people to sign this pledge about voting for, you know, the constitutional principles. So if Trump loses, I guess that's kind of my question or concern. Like, we've seen how vindictive politicians can be, right? And how they can manipulate or use the federal government to their advantage. So if Kamala Harris comes out on top, I mean, could it come back to bite Tesla and Tesla shareholders and not just Elon Musk?
Yeah, it could. And what I would look for is, if Trump does not win the election, look for an SEC lawsuit to come against Elon Musk in the first year. And the reason I say that is he's had run-ins with the SEC before, but those previous run-ins were when he was still kind of a darling of the left. And Gary Gensler, the head of the SEC, is a Biden appointee. He has a lot of the rules and regulations that he has passed have had a very autocratic theme to them, right? A very dictatorial kind of smell to them. To be clear, this guy was the one that was defending the heck out of the SEC's ability to both try and convict you of a felony without ever having the benefit of going before a jury of your peers.
Yeah.
Okay, so anybody that advocates for that scares me, right? Mm-hmm. Regardless of what they're reasoning for or whatever. So, but I would be I agree with you. I think it is very vindictive. I think that these people think that beating Trump that Trump is an existential threat, and that any action taken against Trump or in an effort to keep him out of the White House is morally justifiable on those grounds. And because of that, I would expect them to go after Musk hard after the election if he doesn't win. And Musk knows that. I saw him on with Tucker Carlson recently, and he said, yeah, if Trump doesn't win, I'm effed.
Yeah, I saw that. Yep.
Again, even that, it's so funny to come back around on this guy, but you have to admire that level of when was the last time that we saw somebody in his position in the business community take this kind of principled political stand that has so little benefit to him on an ancillary basis? MAGA voters are not Tesla purchasers, by and large,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There really appears to be no underlying self, you know what I mean? There doesn't seem to be any selfish motivation for this. Maybe there is. I just don't see it. I think a lot of normal people in this country are missing the forest for the trees. I understand why there are undecideds. I understand why people have hesitations about Donald Trump. I just look at him and I go, look, guys, to me, at the end of the day, this just comes down to the Bill of Rights. Okay. When you got once, like, and I wrote a tweet the other day where I was like, you know, excuse me, but I am far more concerned with the assault on free speech than I am with the assault on the Capitol on January 6th. And if you don't agree with me, I just don't think you're seeing the forest for the trees, right? At no point did the quote unquote assault on the Capitol threaten any one of our freedom, not one of ours, right? Yet we're openly talking about the freedom of speech being the problem. And like I've said before, if you contain or limit or constrain the freedom of speech, the rest of the Bill of Rights doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It's like having an unloaded gun, right? Like, great, it looks scary, but there's no real teeth there. If you're not free to say what you think, then we don't have any freedoms. It's all vapor.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens to Elon Musk. Now, I mean, I do, again, I think that the, and I continued the conversation with Zach and told him, I do think January 6th was obviously very serious. But when you're weighing that against other things, right, like the border crisis, I mean, if you don't see the border crisis as a threat to democracy, but you see January 6th as a threat to democracy, like, I can't help you with that. You know, January 6th was bad, but like tens of thousands of people pouring across our southern border that we're unable to track. If you don't think that's a threat to our democracy, like, you're just not looking at this clearly. So anyway, Zach Abraham, he and his team at Bulwark Capital, they specialize in managing risk. That's why he's so in tune with current events, because they track what's happening every single day and adjust your portfolio as necessary to shield you as much as possible from risk. Risk management is Bulwark's number one focus, because you only get one retirement. You do not want to put it in jeopardy by having someone who's not actively managing your portfolio, especially right now. So you can learn about Bulwark's risk management strategy in their free Common Sense Investing Guide. Get yours now by going to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, let's get to some comments, shall we? Caroline says, politicians don't care about liability because if it hits the fan, they'll just scream that they need new taxes and funds to balance the budgets to make us safe, and the voters will fall for it. 100%. That's what they do. It's intentional. I believe that a lot of this is intentional, because if you were going to make problems worse intentionally, you'd do exactly what they're doing, like on the drug crisis and the homeless crisis and the crime crisis, right? And then they'll come back to you and ask you for money to fix the problem they created. Your job is to say no, or to say yes, vote less on the initiatives. DC Bindwell, my kids are now adults, learned gun safety from the time they were in elementary school. It's all how you raise your children. Lack of active parenting is the issue. That's a big part of the problem. Old Sub Sailor, $10 Super Chat. Brandy and Nicole, would it be possible to rotate off your off day during the week? It would be nice to hear from you guys on Friday sometimes and start the weekend right. No. Absolutely not. We love you, but absolutely not.
You know what you could do is just watch Thursday's show on Friday.
Yeah, wake up with us on Fridays. So no, we like our 3-day weekend. I mean, we have a show on Sundays, but we tape it. And look, we're doing a lot of events during the weekends, and so we're usually working every freaking day anyway. But the Friday, Saturday, having that as an option to reset is really nice. So sorry, but no.
And I mean, we did it strategically.
Yes.
Viewership usually...
not great on Fridays.
Goes down a little bit on Fridays.
Yeah. I think when I launched the show, I was doing midway through. I was initially just doing 1 half-hour show, and then I was doing 3, like Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And the Friday show would always get the least listenership. And so it's a matter of like when people are tuned in as well. But thank you for the $10. We'll still take it, even though I told you no. Now, if you give me $1 million super chat, then we'll have a conversation. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. Stacy. Well, if we get depressed after the election, at least we have the undivided support group. 100%. And we'll still, you know, I might need a few days to recover from the depression, but we'll be back at it. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 Super Chat. Brandy, their ideology is their religion and supersedes the individual. You're expendable as long as their religion and virtue signaling is maintained. I assume talking about this trans ideology. I had some guy on X say, why do you have so much hate? Why do you hate gay people and trans people? And I was like, provide me with the exact quote where I said anything hateful about gay people or trans people. You mean the part where I said a biological male accused of rape shouldn't be housed with a woman behind lock and key? Is that hateful? Okay. All right. I'm hateful then. Sergeant Pickles, $4.99 Super Chat. Still on strike. People lie. Should know. Still on strike. People lie. Should know it's not about the 40% medical costs would have gone up, and the starting wage for some jobs is a joke. I'm confused what you're
it's
trying to
Boeing.
Say. Boeing.
The strike, still or going. The, whatever, they voted it down last night.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. It's a weird society that we're in now, because they got almost everything they asked for in wages, but then not the the pension. But they voted against the pension. They gave up their pensions years ago. And so I don't understand how that's like the sticking point. But, you know, whatever, guys.
I don't know. Pensions are nice.
They're very nice, but they're... That's why it doesn't work anymore. Like, it just doesn't work anymore. We live too long. All of these things, it doesn't work for business very well anymore. It's not really working for government anymore, but we still do it. And and I think that's you're just not working.
Yeah, my mom has a private pension. Pretty rare. She worked for farmers. Yeah. And she has a private pension. She worked for sugar beet farmers. And that's great for her. So,
yeah.
B. Larson, compared to the ragweed we had when I was a kid, I don't know why anyone smokes pot these days. A couple of hits and I'm out. Just sitting there like I'm in a bloody coma. Give me a drink any day. Yeah.
I will say that
I definitely think the age limit is a thing. Like, I don't care what adults do. And even, you know, that 25 and under where your brain's still developing and stuff. I have seen it affect kids much differently than it affects the adults I know that do it. And
100%.
I really wish that the age thing could be respected a little bit more in the smoking community.
I agree. But also, like, look at it with kids with drinking, like binge drinking at parties, you know, keg stands. Like, look, I went to a college. I've been there. But, you know, most adults are not doing keg stands and big binge drinking. So it's, it's the same issue with weed. They don't have, like, they just don't know when enough is enough. And they just want to be stoned out of their minds. And it's not good for them.
But I think, I mean, I don't know all the science behind it, but drinking affects you temporarily in a sense, right? But the weed has more effects on children's brains for longer, right? It has lasting effects. And so that's what I mean, is that I think that needs to be shared a little bit more, that it's a lasting effect, and it's like a and it's not just like you're high for a little bit and then you no longer have any symptoms of it, but it's actually affecting brain development. That's part of the science.
Well, I can see that, because you're so freaking lazy while you do it, and then you're behind in school because you didn't pick up a book and read.
You kind of lose motivation, and you kind 100%. Of in your brain your brain's still developing.
I've seen it. I had two college roommates who they were high every day. I had a full-time job at a radio station. I had way more credit hours than I needed. I mean, I was like busy, and I'd come back and they'd be like,
right? I mean, I know somebody out of their mind started doing it very young, and I mean, before that, very like, just had a lot of ambition and was very very good at school, all the things, and then he started smoking weed and his Greg tanked, and he just didn't care anymore. And I mean, I definitely think that's a thing. So that's what worries me about legalization.
Well, it's not legal for kids anyway, but we're talking like 18. Is it? It's 21 plus in our state, right?
Yeah, but it's 26 when your brain, up until 25, 26, your brain's still developing, right?
But you can't have it both ways, right? Mm-hmm. This is a challenging issue we always talk about this, about at what age can you do what, and whatever it is. And like, lefties want to claim that kids, because their brains aren't fully developed, even if they commit a homicide, we should treat them as a child, even up to the age of 25, and put them in a juvenile detention facility. And we're very much opposed to that. So like, my argument is they know the consequences of their behavior at a certain age. And so, you know, it's like, you can't have it both ways. Either they're adults or they're not adults. Right. So that's why, honestly, I think drinking and I think weed, if we've decided in this country the age of majority is 18, where you can do all these other things, then we need to be consistent in it, or else it doesn't make any sense. Yep. So like, if we want to raise the age of majority to 21, then I'm fine with that. But like, you know, you have to look at all the, like, going to war, all these things. And so it's like, we can't decide as a society when you're old enough to make a decision for yourself. Like 14, take gender blockers and we won't tell your parents. It's like, get an ear piercing? Oh, 18 for that. You know, they're getting a hole in your ear. That's a big, big deal. It's really doesn't make a lot of sense.
Nope.
So, all right. Good comments for the usual. Just a really good conversation. And again, thank you so much to Andy and Daniel, who were messaging us about this judge, because I don't think I would have, believe it or not, I'm not on the Seattle Reign FC Twitter page. Not one I follow.
Now I might.
Listen, there's nothing wrong with women's sports. I love women. I am a woman. I know, you know, I have a choice, but I am a woman after all.
But it's crap like that.
Like, no, Seattle Storm, I'm not going to come to your games if you're out there telling people to vote for Harris Walz. And I'd think it was weird, frankly, if you're out there telling people to vote for Trump. Play basketball. Like, I'm sorry. It's just a very, very strange thing to get
in your personal time. Do whatever you want. Each player individually, but as a team. I mean, if there's one person on that team that is not a Harris Walz, why are you speaking for them? Like, that is not
as an entity. It's very, very strange. All right, speaking of very, very strange, let's get to our closing sanity check. Kamala Harris must be really desperate, because she's doing a lot of these interviews and none of them go well, and she keeps doing them. For instance, she did this CNN town hall with Anderson Cooper, and it is just full of horrible, horrible moments for her. Now, there was this one question that I loved, because it's kind of like a question you might get in a job interview, right? Like, oh, what's a weakness? And you have to be a little bit self-deprecating, right? Well, Kamala Harris was asked just that.
What weaknesses do you bring to the table, and how do you plan to overcome them while you're in office?
That's a great question, Joe. Well, I am certainly not perfect. So let's start there. And I think that perhaps a weakness, some would say, but I actually think it's a strength, is I really do value having a team of very smart people around me who bring to my decision-making process, different perspectives. My team will tell you, I am constantly saying, let's kick the tire on that. Let's kick the tires on it.
Let's kick the tire on that. My weakness, but some might say it's a strength, actually. Yeah, you got to watch the clips from that town hall. It was really quite something. All right, just a couple housekeeping things. We have a wonderful episode of Sundays with Subscribers for you coming up this week with a Seattle business owner who's had it up to here with the policies of the city and is really urging his fellow Seattleites to vote differently. Also, on Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., we are going to be out there with a day of action in Steilacoom, door knocking, sign waving. I just had a woman on Twitter say, okay, you got me by saying you're going to have coffee there for us all, sign wave with Nicole. So chalk one up for Team Nicole, but I think I can convince some people to come door knocking with me. For Dave Reichert, for Kelly Chambers, for Pierce County Executive, and to tell people, vote yes, pay less on those initiatives. So I'd like to see as many of you out there as possible. If you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do so. Really important for us during this busy election year and election time with just days left. So you can sign up, UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Again, just $5 a month. What else? Nicole, anything? Am I housekeeping's good? Good to go?
Get those ballots in. I think you got it all.
Get your ballots in if you haven't already.
Tell your friends.
Hold on to them.
Vote yes.
Tell your friends. Vote yes, pay less. All the good stuff. Very appreciative of you guys.
Speaking of judges, vote Larson.
Yep.
Tell your friends.
Vote Larson for Supreme Court Justice.
Olson
for OSPI. Mm-hmm. Basically, if there's someone named Dave on your ballot, go ahead and fill that
just
in.
Just go ahead and do that.
All right. We'll see subscribers on Sunday. We'll see some of you on Saturday. And we'll see the rest of you Monday at noon.